On the Grindhouse Girls podcast, we discuss all things spoopy, scary, and strange. Some content may be disturbing or graphic in nature. Listener discretion is advised. Hello and welcome to Sidetracks, the unscripted and unruly series where we share with you what we've been watching and whether it's worth your time.
This is the Grindhouse Girls Podcast.
I'm Katie.
And hi there, I am Brittany.
Welcome to another episode of Sidetracks. With this one, we will definitely be doing a little Oscars debriefing. It's our post-Oscars episode, but we'll be talking about other stuff too. It won't just be Oscars debriefing, but I'm sure we'll have to talk about that because there's so much to talk about because the Oscars happened 2 days ago.
Yay, sure did, yep.
We watched, I don't know if you guys saw our Instagram post, but Britt hosted a little get-together with some friends, and all three of us were there, including our editor and our Moody, or Ryan, and Godzilla Minus One
won. Yay!
Which was super exciting.
The whole room cheered on that one, so.
It was very exciting. And Anatomy of a Fall won Best Original Screenplay!
Yay!
And the Zone of Interest won two things, including sound, which everyone in the room was like, Oppenheimer's gonna get. I was like, I don't know, Zone of Interest is all about the sound. And then it won, and I was very happy.
Yeah.
Because also, one of the sound people also worked on Poor Things, so he would have won for one or the other.
Yeah.
So, or like, he was nominated in two different movies in the same category, which I thought was interesting. And post-Oscar interview, Emma Stone won Best Actress, and everyone started cheering. He's like, what happened? They're like, oh, Emma won? Yay!
Yeah.
It was really cute. But yeah, how did you feel about the Oscars?
This year? I would say it was, like, a largely uneventful Oscar, so it wasn't a bad Oscars.
No slaps.
Yeah, it wasn't one of those, like, wow, this is, like, one of the best Oscars ever. As we discussed before, I don't really think the Oscars need a host. I think they've been they have been having a hard time, like, landing a good host. And Jimmy Kimmel is decent, not my favorite. I did grow up with Billy Crystal, though, so that probably explains why I'm a little biased. But highlights... messy at the Oscars and
the magic
of messy clapping, which I found out that there's a lot of controversy. Like, supposedly a lot of the Academy were really upset that messy was at the Oscar luncheon because they're just like, well, that's gonna like give voters like they're gonna be more lenient towards Anatomy of the Fall. And I'm like, because the dog is cute, like,
he's an actor, you don't have a pet acting category like Khan does.
I know.
Idiots.
I think it was the last time I really remember a dog in like a Best Picture nominee that actually won Best Picture was Uggy, who was like the little like terrier in The Artist, who was also a very cute dog
and he did a lot
of good tricks. But yeah, and then of course Ryan Gosling's performance of I'm Just Ken was just
The best. It was the best Oscars musical performance I think I've ever seen.
Yes.
And no offense to Billie Eilish, I think What Was I Made For is a very pretty song, and I think she sang it very well. I think Phineas played his little piano very well. I was kind of like, like, it's a pretty song, but I would have preferred I'm Just Ken to win, but it was more of the Oscar appropriate song.
I will say, in terms of the movie, like, I do love I'm Just Ken in the movie, but, like, I think, so, spoilers for Barbie, but hopefully y'all have seen it by then. So, What Was I Made For is played at two very pivotal moments in Barbie, mm-hmm. and both of those moments made me cry. So, I think it's just, like, such a powerful part
of
the movie.
And the lyrics are very, like... it's very relevant to the film. Like, I used to float, now I just fall. It literally happens in the movie. But, like, it's a beautiful beautiful song. Yeah. I just was like, I'm Just Ken was really fun.
I'm Just Ken is definitely the funner song to watch being performed. Yeah.
And I was like, and it took over the fucking world. So I was like, I was kind of a little surprised. But I was like, but I feel like most people, when they vote for, like, a best song, it's usually going to be, like, the sadder song. I can't remember. Wait, who won best song last year?
Not to.
Which was a fun-ass song.
It was from RRR.
Yeah, but it was a fun song.
It was, like, yeah.
Did a sad song
die? I love that. I actually loved that performance last year, too. That was really good.
Oh, wait. When was We Don't Talk About Bruno? Was that the year before?
I think it was the year before. Yeah.
I don't think it got nominated, though. I think they just ended up performing it.
Okay. Oh, maybe that's what it was. Maybe it was such a big one. Oh, because it was the Caterpillar song that got nominated from Encanto instead.
Oh. Which was also pretty, but...
Yeah.
We Don't Talk About Bruno was an earworm. It's still an earworm for
me. Yeah, I hear someone say
that, I'm like, no, 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 no.
I have to sing every part of that song, too. Like, I'm not a singer by nature, but I was like, I'm going to fucking try. Like,
well, you don't get the true story if you don't sing every single part you could of the Magical Family.
Even if you didn't know that's a Lin-Manuel Miranda song, you can also tell it's a Lin-Manuel Miranda song.
It's true.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was a highlight. I will say, so personally, not to be controversial, Jonathan Glazer's speech made me tear up and cry. So did Devine Joy Randolph?
Yes. Randolph.
She also made me tear up. But, like, the fact that personally, and this is, like, I am not a Jewish person. I am not of any kind of Middle Eastern descent, not Palestinian, not Israeli. But, like, I'm very much like, I think everyone should exist in peace. And I grew up Catholic, and I think the Crusades were an awful thing. And so, like, I've never really understood the whole, like, fighting over a piece of land, even though I know that it's religiously important to a lot of different religions. I get that. But fighting over it seems the opposite of what, quote unquote, peaceful religions we are all supposed to be. Seems to be the antithesis of that. I've just never really understood that vibe, and I think it is a lot of the Christians' fault with the whole Crusades thing so many years ago. But that being said, like, you know, I think Jonathan Glazer made a very good point that, like, using religion, and for him, he's Jewish, so specifically his Jewishness is what he said, as an excuse for genocide, in his opinion, isn't a good thing. And the reason he made the movie was because we as a world often ignore terrible things that happen right outside our door. You know, for the people of Israel, it's what's happening in Gaza. And not that everyone's ignoring it, but, like, you know, if that's happening next door to you, obviously, if it's in Ukraine, that is happening right now. If it's Alexei Navalny obviously getting murdered for being a political rival of,
Putin?
Dobby.
Oh, Dobby.
Putin,
yeah.
Putin, but yeah. He looks like Dobby. Or Dobby looks like him, rather. You know, that's, and not doing anything, because, you know, or like here, like, you know, recently in our city, a bunch of housing projects were ripped down, and they're going to build high-rise apartments on top of
them. Which we don't need more apartments.
Which we don't need more of. No one's living down there anyways.
Yeah.
You know, like, what do we do when we see people, like, unhomed, unhoused? Like, we shouldn't stand by. And the whole point of the zone of interest is the banality of evil and how these people, who could have been any of us, convinced themselves that what they were doing was okay by ignoring every moral fiber of their being and literally ignoring the sounds of thousands of people being murdered next door to them while they're enjoying a Sunday afternoon in their pool in their garden. Like, that's the whole point of the movie, is, like, it's not that, it's the evil of ignorance and just ignoring things and dehumanizing other people and not thinking that the people in Gaza or the people in Israel or the people in Ukraine or the people in Russia or the people in Afghanistan are people, and making them just a thing and not a human being. Because when you really think about it, I don't think anyone with a moral compass would be okay with bombing.
Yeah.
any place, or, you know, making it so girls can't read in Afghanistan, or, you know, killing people for having differences, or like being part of the KKK and killing people, hunting them down because of their race, like those people in Georgia with Ahmaud Arbery. Like, all of that stuff is bad. So to me, I was like, that's beautiful. And he was like, be like the girl who resisted and resist the evil. And I was like, that's great. But the Academy has not published his speech on their official YouTube page as of recording. They also have not published his post-Oscars interview, like the little interview that the press asked him, as of recording time. And apparently a bunch of people think that he was like basically using the Holocaust illly. I don't think that was his intention, and I think if you heard that, go listen to his actual speech, because a lot of people are misquoting what he said. So, and I'm not going to quote it here because I don't want to misquote it, but go listen to yourself and see if you think that there's a... I don't think there's an evil intent behind it. I think he truly would like some peace, and he's been working on this movie for 10 years. He didn't make this movie to talk about Palestine-Israel conflict. He made this movie because... he is of Jewish descent, and it was something that interested him about, like, how could people live next door to a death camp and just pretend that everything was fine? And it's not really about the people, it's about what they represent and, like, how people become monsters. I get that that movie's really, like, it is a very quiet movie, except for, you know, the sounds of guns killing people and screams constantly. But like, I personally really liked it because there's so much that went into it with like having 10, I'm surprised it didn't win cinematography because the way it was filmed was incredibly complicated and amazing. I'm kind of surprised it didn't win Best Director either because of all of the stuff that went into it. But I'm glad it won Best International Feature because I do want more people to see it because I think it doesn't show gratuitous violence. But it is obviously implied what is happening. And if you know anything about Auschwitz, then you will know, like, what is happening. But it does remind me, like, when you go to the Holocaust Museum, there's, like, there's these little, like, walls up. And there's little steps. And if you want to see the really awful things, like, there's, you can step on these steps and look over the wall and see the pictures of, like, the really, really bad stuff that will haunt your nightmares. And they will show it, and they kind of give you the choice. I think I like that this movie, like, doesn't make you look at it, but always reminds you of what's actually going on. Because, and it becomes background noise to these people, and they're just used to it. And it's, like, so fucking disturbing. And it really, like, sits with you and makes you feel very uncomfortable with, like, what do I ignore in my life? You know?
Yeah.
Which I think everyone should think about. So anyways, that controversy, that's the biggest controversy this year. I mean, nobody got slapped, but still.
Which is weird because, like, Katie, you speak of it as a controversy, but I haven't heard, like, any major news outlets, like, reporting on it. Because usually when I think of the term controversy, you're going to see things like Entertainment Weekly, Variety, stuff like that.
Well, The Hollywood Reporter is basically reporting that a Holocaust survivor what is the organization? It's like a Holocaust survivor organization is like condemning him.
And that's crazy because I mean, now once again, I'm like you, I'm not Jewish either. But I did not get that from that speech.
No.
Personally, like I did not get that from that speech. And I don't think anyone that we watched it with or that I've discussed the Oscars with has gotten anything crazy like that from it either.
Yeah. It's also like a U.S. Holocaust survivors. Not that that makes it any less important. I'm just saying it's an, like, and the thing is, like, obviously, like, I think before the October 7th stuff happened, there was an uptick in anti-Semitism and especially hate crimes against Jewish people in America. And there have been.
Yeah.
And they're terrible. And that should not happen. And I disagree. But I also don't think there should be crimes against Palestinian people. I'm like, I don't understand why we have to choose sides of this.
Yeah.
That's what bothers me. It's like, I don't feel like I have to choose Israeli people or Palestinian people. I don't want any of them to die. I would like just the ceasefire to happen and the violence to stop. And I would like the leaders of both groups to just talk to each other and live peacefully. And I know that is a very rose-colored glasses idea, but I don't understand why you want to violently hurt other people. It's not good.
I had a button when I was a kid, and it was like my mom's from like the 1970s, but it said war is not healthy for children and other living things.
Yeah.
And I still kind of have that empathetic view on like, I personally don't want people to die. That's just how I feel about
That's
it.
Just
now,
me.
I know it's not that easy. It's not black and white, but mm-hmm. For me, I'm like, why would you want to kill your civilians? And why especially would you want to kill children that are your future?
Yes.
Your country's
future.
And
that's why I think the zone of interest is so important to this specific thing, especially like Ukraine and Gaza. I think like there are so many children and young people that have been affected by both of these situations. And the fact that like the family in the movie, the Hosses, have all these children.
Yeah.
Yet, you know, they killed all the women and children in Auschwitz immediately. And, like, I mean, and maybe if you didn't, I don't know. I don't know why, but my school studied a lot about the Holocaust.
We did in second
obviously
grade.
Obviously, it was a bad, not, like, a positive way. And, like, this is a terrible thing. But we studied it a lot. And, like, you know, Diary of Anne Frank was required reading. Number the Stars was required reading. I remember reading The Devil's Arithmetic. And, like, I think the fact that, like, from a young age, I realized how evil people could be, I think it really stuck with me. And I really was drawn to stuff about that because I would love that never to happen again. And so, like, but seeing how it happens, I think, is like very important. Like that's like we were talking like a little bit like how nationalism, having pride in your nation is fine, but nationalism when it's us and nobody else isn't a great thing because it's what led to Nazi Germany. So sorry, that was depressing. On a positive note, neither Killers of the Flower Moon or Maestro won anything.
Which, that's what my coworker said today. He was like, they were talking on NPR that they were very surprised that Scorsese didn't want anything. I said, I honestly wasn't. Like, and he was like, really?
No,
I was
that like, movie's bad.
I was like, it wasn't my least favorite Scorsese movie, but I think Scorsese has had a lot of better movies that he has already won awards for, which I do love that it brought awareness to the Osage and the terrible, terrible things that had happened to them. So I'm glad that the movie brought awareness to that. But like we've discussed before, there probably could have been a better film made of it. But Lily is an angel. We love her. I will forever stand Lily
apparently
Gladstone.
Apparently Emma Stone supposedly texted her afterwards and said, you were robbed.
Yeah.
I was going to say that. And then the music started and I panicked. But I'm so mad that you didn't win. Which I think Emma Stone did a great job. I was a little, like, bored that she won. Because she's already won one before.
Well, I will say, I do think that this was probably the more embodied and command performance over La La Land.
Yeah.
So maybe they were like, oh, fuck. Like, this is the... We already gave her it for La La Land, and this is the better, like, performance from her. So maybe we should again. I don't know. But...
The whole problem I had with Lily Gladstone getting nominated... It wasn't that she was getting nominated. I didn't think she was going to win because she simply wasn't given much to do. And that's a Scorsese problem and not a Lily Gladstone problem. Mm-hmm. So I'm hoping that this leads to her getting meatier roles because she obviously is a great talent and I would like to see her in more stuff for sure.
Yeah, I would too. I love her. I'm still like hoping there'll be another like best actress chance for her because I really want that high school yearbook prediction for her. I want her to have that.
To win an Oscar so she could even win supporting actress. Yeah. Although actress I know is the goal, but even supporting, I feel like a lot of times the supporting actors are more deserved than the main ones, in my opinion. I'm more like Divine Joy Randolph, I was like, absolutely, she deserved it. I wanted Sandra Hüller to win Best Actress, because I think hers was the most complicated. She spoke in three different fucking languages. She had learned French a little bit before filming, but she really learned it for the movie. And it was like, I'm like, that was, and it was such a complicated role to play. But I think not that many people maybe saw it because it is a foreign film.
I also, you know? I think it's very interesting too. So I will say in Anatomy of a Fall and The Zone of Interest were definitely the two international films that people probably saw the most of. But Perfect Days was a big movie, and it, like, swept the Japanese Academy Awards. And so, like, I would have loved to have just had the chance to see it before the Oscars.
Yeah, it was at one theater. It was at Sidewalk, I think. But it was, for, like, for me, it was, like, a weekend where I couldn't go. And it was only for a few days. And I don't think that was Sidewalk's doing, because they usually try to do, like, a full week if a movie's, like, because I think for Zone of Interest, they had a full week. It just happened to the week where my car was crashed. Yeah. I didn't have a car. I also was, like, I wasn't surprised Cillian Murphy won or that Robert Downey Jr. won, but they weren't my preference, even though I loved them both. I thought it would be better for Paul Giamatti to win Best Actor, personally, because he has been nominated multiple times, and he was great. And I do think Cillian Murphy was great. I think there was a lot more life in Paul Giamatti's character. Cillian Murphy was a lot of, like, being very quiet, which is fine.
I think I had that conversation with my coworker today where she was like, did you enjoy the Oscars? And I said, absolutely. And she said, did you think who would win? I said, yeah, I knew it would be Oppenheimer that won Best Picture. And she goes,
yeah.
Do you think Oppenheimer deserved to win Best Picture? I said, and, like, immediately I did my defensive. I threw my hands up. I said, film is subjective. I just gotta say, film is subjective. Like, I was like, I like Oppenheimer. I said, it wasn't my favorite of the Best Picture nominees, but I was like, I've been watching the award shows long enough to know they like epics, and they like historical dramas. So I was like, and my biopics. Little film I love wasn't gonna win, and I knew that. But I still love Past Lives. So, I mean.
I did too. Yeah. I was sad Past Lives didn't win anything, but it also was her first film.
Yeah.
So she's got a long way to go. It's pretty impressive to get nominated twice for a first film.
So, movie news. So Celine Song is already working on her second film. It's going to be a romantic comedy, which to me, I'm hoping she does the next one, Harry Met Sally, is what I'm hoping for, because I'm like, that would be perfect for her, something of that nature. But Ari Aster also started filming
his next movie.
Did you see who's starring in it?
It was, yes, but now I'm blanking.
Joaquin Phoenix, Emma Stone, Pedro Pascal, and Austin Butler. Yeah.
Which, do we have anything else to talk about with the Oscars? Because I have a good segue for Austin Butler.
No, I mean, I could talk probably another hour for the Oscars. So, but I'll wrap up for now, yeah.
I would say, I mean, I'm glad Christopher Nolan won for Best Director. Mm-hmm. Not that I thought, I still think that Jonathan Glazer's process for Zone of Interest was much more complicated. And I personally love Justine Triet, but he's been nominated multiple times and never won. And he is a auteur filmmaker. He is fantastic. Also, apparently he's really into the Fast and the Furious franchise. That was on the Colbert Show, and I was like, huh. That's funny. But he loves them, apparently. He watches them all the time. He was telling Stephen Colbert that he should just watch Tokyo Drift and then watch the other ones, like, in whatever order. And he is a bit of an expert on the Fast and Furious franchise.
You know what? Tokyo Drift is actually Taylor's favorite. So that's why
Also, Al Pacino just skipped all the Best Picture nominees.
I know, the most uneventful, announcement I've ever seen.
Will I see Oppenheimer? And I was just like, oh my god. This is like Diane Keaton reading La La Land.
Yeah.
Accidentally. I was like, oh my god.
Well, it was so Bonnie and Clyde. Was it Faye Dunaway? It was Faye Dunaway and...
Oh, it was Faye Dunaway. Yeah. I'm so sorry.
No, it's okay.
To Diane Keaton. It was not Diane Keaton.
Just like, they brought out like Faye Dunaway and... Was it who played Clyde?
Warren Beatty.
Yeah, it was Warren Beatty. Yeah. And that's what it was like. And I don't know if you heard Jimmy Kimmel said it, because you know Emma Stone won Best Actress, and that's the whole debacle, was they got the Best Actress envelope accidentally for La La Land, which is why he said it.
But he's like,
hey everyone, like, make sure no one gets a hold of that envelope. Because it's like, we don't want another, you know, haha.
Yeah.
So
that was really funny. Like, I don't know. I just did not. I think I should have seen it in IMAX, because it just did not blow me away. And I was kind of just like, I think biopics to me are just kind of getting boring.
I liked it.
Like,
Now, I liked it. I will say a middle ground. I don't know if it's one of my favorite movies ever, but I did enjoy, like, the large scope cinema experience. I thought that was really, really cool. I love the ending. Like, the ending just haunted me. I got cold chills with the ending. Yeah. But, yeah, it's not good. Definitely one I return to over and over. But once, yeah. As I've said before, the historical dramas aren't always my favorite anyway, so.
And I usually like historical dramas, but I just, like, I don't know. But I will say, I don't feel like I wasted my time watching it. So, like, it's not like Killers of the Flower Moon where I was like, I personally want Martin Scorsese to compensate me for all the hours I spent watching this terrible movie that was too slow and told from the wrong perspective. How dare you, sir? It's okay. I love you, Marty. I do love him, but that was a terrible movie. Maestro was worse, though. Anyways, but speaking of epic films,
yes,
that I don't feel like I wasted my time, I saw Dune 2.
Ah, yes. You have to tell me more about that. I have not made it yet. Hopefully in the next week.
So I really liked it. We had to see it pretty late at night. I didn't fall asleep. I did start to zone out at one point, but it was more of like the becoming white noise at that point. But I will say, I really liked it. I thought it was highly entertaining. It is over 2 hours and 40 minutes.
Pretty long.
But it moves very well, and it doesn't have any lulls in it, which I enjoyed. There's a lot of action, because it's a lot of Timothée Chalamet's Paul kind of learning how to be a Fremen. And so, like, he's riding sandworms, and he's learning how to fight, and Zendaya's character, she's, like, teaching him how to do this stuff, and Javier Bardem also is teaching him, and then Rebecca Ferguson's character,
right? His mom.
Her character takes, like, the weirdest fucking turn, and, like, she becomes, like, a holy woman, but she's also pregnant, and there's this whole thing where the baby's talking to her, but they presented it in, like, a very, like, interesting but kind of creepy way. And the Harkonnens, the bad guys, you know, all the bald people, Austin Butler plays one of them. And I was like, he literally looks like Bill Sarsgaard, bald. And he made his voice sound like Stellan Skarsgård, who's playing his uncle in it, like the big fat guy, who's obviously in a bodysuit because Stellan Skarsgård is not that fat in real life. Apparently he didn't tell Stellan Skarsgård that he was going to do his voice. He finally got rid of the Elvis voice to do this movie, I guess. But he did a really good job being a creepy little creep. And, which was interesting because, like, I was very milquetoast about his Elvis performance. And, he did a really good job. And, you know, Dave Bautista is the other Harkonnen. It's his brother. And so, Dave Bautista, I always love seeing Dave Bautista. And Christopher Walken.
Yes.
Is the Emperor. And he does not sound like Christopher Walken. There's no Walkenisms, which is a little boring. But he does. I was very surprised at how reserved he was. And Florence Pugh does a really good job. And Anya Taylor-Joy does pop in, but she's only in there for a little bit. But I'm pretty sure she's going to be in the next film, which I don't know. Some people are saying it's going to take at least 2 years. Some people say it's going to take even longer because they might wait for the actors to age. But I really hope not, because personally, I want to see the third one now, like as soon as possible, please. But it's really good. And I would say it has very Empire Strikes Back vibes, especially with all the training sequences. But I will also say that because this book was written way before Star Wars and probably influenced Star Wars. Honestly, Empire Strikes Back is a little like Dune Part 2,
yeah.
If I'm going to be fair. But it makes me want to read the books even more. So, but I really liked it. Scott actually has read not all the books, but he's read like the first three or four, all the ones that Paul's in, because there's Dune, Children of Dune, and then Dune Messiah, and those are all the ones that Paul's in. And I think we're still in the first book. The first book is huge. It's bigger than Gone with the Wind.
Oh, wow.
So I'm glad they're doing... because that book is fucking long as shit. So I think we're still in the first book.
Oh, wow.
Which is why I think maybe they will do the third movie sooner rather than later. And then maybe do Children of Dune and then Dune Messiah. I don't know, though, for sure. But I do like that they're doing this in multiple parts and not trying to cram all of it into one movie, because when they made David Lynch do that, like, is very weird, but it's David Lynch. But also, like, it's a lot of just so much information. And then he ended up having to put in all these, like, voiceover narrations with the Emperor's daughter, which is Florence Pugh's character. But it's Virginia Madsen in that. And it's just, like, really, like, it's a lot. It's just, like, too much information. And this is, like, a nice way to, like, parcel it out. I do miss Oscar Isaac.
Yeah, though. He's good.
I mean, I know he's dead. And by, just spoiler alert, Duncan Idaho is not back yet. So there is no... Yeah, it was really good. I think it's really... It's something you probably should see in theaters if you can see it in IMAX. We saw it in IMAX and it was really good. And it was... Especially if you like space movies.
Yeah, I heard it's one of the best sci-fi films ever made, possibly.
It... I would say... I mean, Star Wars, obviously, nostalgically, mm-hmm. is my favorite sci-fi movie. But I would say this one is probably even better made than Star Wars. But Star Wars just has a really fun, like, storyline, and it's fun and funny. So for me, it's nostalgia. But I do think these are probably better made. But yeah, it's good. Did you watch anything new?
I have. So I've actually been on a TV series binge, which is unnormal for me. Usually I do the movie thing. I don't do too many TV series. But I will say... So, I did watch the live action. Well, me and Taylor watched the live action Avatar The Last Airbender. And I have to tell you guys.
Oh, I'm curious. I want to know how you feel about it after the Cowboy Bebop fiasco.
Oh, God. Okay, well, I have to start off by saying we're huge Avatar The Last Airbender animated fans. Yes. Like, we love the TV show. It and Hey Arnold are my two favorite Nicktoons of all time. So I like the Cats theme because I have never seen the Shyamalan movie. All I had to do was see some clips from the Shyamalan movie to be like, no, we're not. I can't ever watch it. So what I really liked about the live action is obviously the casting was really on point. They cast, like, indigenous actors. They cast, like, Asian actors. So they really had that kind of, like, that correct casting that we would have expected from the anime series to have. So my issue, and it's a really bad issue, is that it's very overstuffed. They didn't let things ferment naturally. And what I mean about that is, for all you Avatar people out there, you know what I'm saying when I say, like, Zuko has the best redemption arc you will probably ever see in any anime show. And there was moments...
He's like Jaime Lannister, right? Huh? Like, where, like, you hate him. He's kind of like does a Jaime Lannister, yes. Right? Where you hate him God. And then he changes.
In the first season, so basically there's three seasons of Avatar The Last Airbender. There's book one, which is water, book two, earth, and book three, fire. Which is another great thing about the series is that it has a very strong beginning, middle, end. And I would say... Me personally, I think the anime series, and particularly the first episode, the pilot, is probably like one of the worst episodes of the series. But as it gets rolling, it gets better and better and better. And it does things, it explains things like genocide even at a like children's level so a child can understand it, as well as like propaganda and like how, I forgot the actual word for it, but basically when you teach people the incorrect history to kind of make them...
Lying?
Yeah, it's lying, but there's an actual word for it, too, where it's like, so for example...
Gaslighting?
Well, Aang is like an air nomad, and that's the beginning of the story is that essentially what happens is that Aang finds out he's the Avatar, and he's an air nomad, and he runs away, and when he does, he accidentally freezes himself in his Sky Bison Appa, and 100 years pass. But after he's frozen, like right after the Fire Nation comes and they kill the air nomads, and the air nomads are like pacifists, they're like essentially kind of like Buddhist monks. And so years later, he's in like a Fire Nation school, and they're like, well, yeah, when they fought the air nomad army, and he's like, there was no air nomad army because, you know, and the teacher's like, well, how would you know that unless you were there 100 years ago? But essentially, like, they're teaching the children the wrong history. Like, they were teaching the children that the air nomads were fighters and they were violent and they weren't. So it's just like things like that. They teach you at a very like childlike level that like how things can be inherently taught wrong. All that to say, I'm so sorry.
By the way, the term, I'll let you catch your breath. The term is historical negationism.
Okay, negationism.
Also called historical denialism, is from Wikipedia, is falsification or distortion of the historical record. It should not be conflated with historical revisionism, a broader term that extends to newly evidenced, fairly reasoned academic reinterpretations of history. So it is revising the history, but incorrectly. So that's why you call it falsification and not, or negationism.
Yeah.
Like, because you're negating history, not revising it to be more accurate. Because I guess revisionism could be in a positive or negative way.
Yeah. And that makes sense too. And that's, I kind of like how they did that. So they're teaching these things, but it's in an animated show and they put it in these terms and for these characters that like, so kids can understand. Well, Zuko, like, essentially, like, it's almost like that, is it what's coming back to nationalism. So Zuko's the Fire Nation prince, and it's, like, an extreme form of nationalism that, like, the Fire Nation believes they're above the other nations. Like, Air Nation's completely wiped out except for Aang, but then you also have, like, the Earthbenders, the Waterbenders, so Earth and Water Nation. And then as the series goes on, he starts to, as he comes into contact with people different than him, he starts to question like his own identity, his own history. Oh. And it's very powerful. And by the last season, I think Zuko may just be my favorite character. Him or his uncle Iroh, who is a pacifist, who's very peaceful. Just incredible characters. But all this to say, it's so fucking sad though, because he's actually, he speaks out against his father. You see this in a flashback where his father in like basically the Fire Nation was just gonna sacrifice these troops, and he speaks out and he's like, no, this is wrong. We can't sacrifice our own people. And so like he agrees to fight what he thinks is a general in a battle, and it's actually his dad. And he's a 13-year-old child and he begs for forgiveness, and his dad scars his face. And, like, sends him away. Yeah, a 13-year-old kid. Oh. And his dad sends him away and is like, you can't come back until you find the Avatar. Well, guess what? The Avatar has been fucking missing for 100 years. And so, like, you know, like, you start to feel for the character, but then you see, like, this rage and this conflict inside him. All this to say, so in the live-action Avatar, it almost felt to me and Taylor like they were so afraid that they weren't going to get a second season that they crammed in so much detail. So you start seeing like overlapping of the second and first seasons and like things just like, and there's a lot of fan service moments, which was great as a fan to see those moments. But it also was like, they're like, let's get it in just in case we don't get a second season. Let's get this in. Let's get this in. Let's get this in. And so we were seeing a lot of, like, second season Zuko in the first season, and there's just a lot of random things that it didn't, it just didn't feel like they let it breathe. They couldn't let things, like, come with time. And then it was also, there were some very cringe moments, too. So, like, there's, in the animated series, at the beginning of every episode, it's like, Earth, fire, water, air. Yeah. And it's, like, showing you, it's like that opening scene. Well, in the first episode, they literally have a character, like, say it out loud. And it's like, no, this does not. Aww. It's like a character in dialogue. Like, she's talking to a room full of people, and they have her say it out loud. And you're just like, this is a little too pandering.
So, is it worse than Cowboy Bebop or better than Cowboy Bebop, the live action? Because I, having only casually watched Cowboy Bebop, loved the casting. And
the casting was great for Cowboy Bebop.
And had a fun time. And then I remember going to Friendsgiving and everybody hated it. And I was like the one person was like, I thought it was kind of fun. And I liked the remix of the theme song.
Yeah.
And they were like, well, it was terrible. And I was like, okay.
The casting for Cowboy Bebop was great. I love the casting for Cowboy Bebop, especially Jet. I thought like Jet was very spot on. Like, I think they took a lot of liberties with the story, and especially Julia. If anyone knows Julia from Cowboy Bebop and the twist they did with Julia, I think that's what like a lot of fans were like, no. With Avatar, it's almost like they went the extreme opposite. So if Cowboy Bebop, they didn't really try to do fan service, it's almost like Avatar, The Last Airbender's live action, they tried to overstuff with the fan service. And that's what I didn't I just felt like it was so much. And the dialogue was not really good. Like, I think the kid actors did great, especially Sokka. The Sokka was Sokka. Like, he to me, embodied his animated counterpart, which was really cool. He was mm-hmm. funny. He even looked like Sokka to me, like, more than all the other actors did. And like I said, Netflix, they're good at casting. Like, the casting was not bad for Avatar.
Yeah, but the dialogue but they was also so you keep, are quick to yeah. cancel stuff after one season. Because, like, remember Area...
Archive 81. That Archive Ryan 81. Loved.
Which Scott ended up watching it on his own. I was, because I had told him about it. And I come home and he's like, wait, did they just stop there? And I was like, yep. And then he started listening to the podcast and he does not like the podcast as much as this TV show. Because he said the podcast goes in a very weird direction. And I was like, all right. Neither one of us are good with interdimensional things. Yeah. Like, if something's an interdimensional creature, I kind of am like, meh.
Yes.
Not, it doesn't faze me. But yeah, like, they are quick to cut people off. So did they finish the whole series?
So this is what's...
In this first season?
This is what's hilarious. So I do have to say real quick, the other thing that bothered me was the dialogue, because they're just like, he is the last airbender. He's the Avatar. And I'm like, okay, we know Aang's the Avatar. Like, you can just explain that in the first episode. You don't have to keep fucking reminding us. We know Aang's the Avatar. Save the world.
This show's called Avatar. There's an Avatar in it.
I have to save the world. I'm here to save the world. It's up to me to save the world. I'm like, yes, we know you're gonna fucking save the world. Like, we get it. Okay, so that was, like, the other thing that I was just like... I was like, if we take a shot for every time they say he's the Avatar, he's going to save the world, I'd be fucking drunk by the third, like, second episode. But all this to say, it wasn't terrible. I didn't hate it. I just thought it was a little pandering, a little overstuffed.
Aww.
This is what's crazy. It was actually greenlit for the second and third season, which means we will see the complete series.
Okay. I heard they also, there was a character who's kind of misogynistic, and they... were afraid to make him sexist, but like that's his character. Like, I don't remember which character it was, but somebody was complaining before the show Sokka. Came out that's the root. Oh, okay. Yeah. So Sokka's supposed to be kind of like sexist, and then he's like proven wrong, yes. And so he becomes less sexist.
Exactly. So that's like a bit of his character development that was kind of missing, because he meets Suki in the Kyoshi Warriors, and Suki is a female fighter, and she kind of puts him in his place, and so slowly he gains respect. And I do love Sokka, because he's also like the comic relief, but you're right, they did kind of take out elements of that, and I think were maybe afraid to offend people, so that's kind of interesting. But I mean, too.
If the character changes, yeah,
exactly.
I don't think you're gonna be offending. That's the thing. I'm like, if it's leading to something good, most people would be okay with it. Well, at least it's not as bad as Cowboy Bebop.
Well, that's the other thing with like Zuko, though, is like what I was saying. So Zuko was like major dick in the first season of Avatar, and then you slowly mm-hmm. see that character arc and that redemption arc come through. And me and Taylor are like, this Zuko's a lot nicer. Zuko's a lot nicer in this live action than the Zuko we see in first season Avatar. But it is interesting because Taylor was watching The Brother's Son, which is Michelle Yao's TV series on Netflix, where she like plays a mom.
I haven't gotten to see it yet.
It was canceled. It was, so they did the first season.
Already?
It was canceled, yeah. And so it's really interesting with Netflix because you just never know. Because like I said, if I hadn't known any better, the way they rushed the first season of Avatar, I would have thought for sure they just didn't know if they were going to get a second season. But they did. They get a second and third season.
Weird. I wonder if... I guess people are watching it, though, so they're like, that's okay.
Mm-hmm.
I haven't watched more than the first episode because I haven't had time to. Mm-hmm. But I did start watching Shogun.
We did, too! Okay.
I really like it. I've only seen episode one, but I loved it. It is brutal,
mm-hmm.
but very brilliant. I love it. It's like Game of Thrones kind of violence. Like, but not as much nudity because it's FX. So if you liked Game of Thrones, but there was too many naked people, maybe this one, at least in the first episode, there wasn't that many naked people. They are only covering the first book in the series, and they're only going to do the miniseries.
Yeah.
Which Scott found that, and he was a little disappointed. I was like, well... I think it's better to, like, do it. I personally like miniseries a lot. because, like, it's contained and they have to have the beginning and the end. So, like, you're not just going to be left on a cliffhanger if it gets canceled after a season. So, personally, I'm a big fan of miniseries. I did like the casting, especially of, like, a lot of the Japanese actors, because, like, we've got Hiroyuki Sanada, who was in Ringu that we did. He was also in Westworld, and he was recently in Mortal Kombat as Hanzo. And then also, I'm going to mispronounce his name. I'm apologizing. Tadanobu Asana, who was Lord Raiden in the new Mortal Kombat, but he's also been in Thor Ragnarok, Thor, and Ichi the Killer. He's, like, a really good, like, evil person. He's the guy that's, like, obsessed with death. And so they boil someone alive, and he just wants to hear people die.
Yeah.
Because he's, like, obsessed. It's kind of like the movie Martyrs, but just one character. But I will say...
I do like, and I not to spoil anything with you, so we're caught up other than the episode that just released today. I do like, it doesn't remind me of Game of Thrones in, like, the fractions, but what it does remind me is, like, the epic scale. And also the characters are very great. Like, every character has, other than Lady Mariko, which I think she's just lovely all around. Most of the characters is, like, they do things that make you like them and hate them at the same time.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I think that they're very, like, realistic. I will say... The one thing, Scott and I are watching the first episode. When we watched the first episode, the second episode wasn't there to watch. I guess we watched it, like, right after the first episode aired. So we're watching it, and the guy playing John Blackthorne, who's, like, the English navigator, who's, like, kind of... He's not... But in this, he's not really the main character, but he's kind of the main character. Mm-hmm. Scott was like, I feel like they wanted to cast Tom Hardy, but they could not get Tom Hardy. And so they got this guy. And I can't unsee it. And I can't stop thinking about, like, man, if this was Tom Hardy, wow. This would be... Because I watched Taboo, and it's a very similar period piece. Like, well, it's like the 1700s, but, like, it's like a similar vibe of, like, seafaring people and all this stuff. And so I was like, oh, that would be good. But he does a good job. It's just, I was like, man, now I can't stop thinking about Tom Hardy being this part. But he does a good job. I do like that they're only speaking Japanese unless they're it's a character who speaks English, or technically Portuguese, because the people speaking English in the show, in the logic of the show, are speaking Portuguese, because that the Portuguese... Catholic missionaries had already come and had converted some people. And then I didn't realize, like, the whole Protestant Catholic thing was a big thing in this show, but it's the 1600s, so right after the Protestant Reformation. So everybody's fighting.
I've always wanted to see this movie. I haven't got the chance yet, but have you seen or heard of Silence by Martin Scorsese? It has Andrew Garfield.
I have almost watched it so many times. Yeah. But I have, because it's very long.
And this is the same time period, though. First long. Right? Like,
yeah, okay. It's the same time period. Yeah, I think so. Because, like, that was a whole thing where, like, people were converting people. I did watch The Mission with, who is in that? Is it Robert De Niro? I don't know. Which is about missionaries in, I can't remember which country it is, but, like, around the same time period, and it was really good. But it's probably Catholic propaganda, to be honest. I don't think Silence is as much of Catholic propaganda, though, because I think Martin Scorsese is a very lapsed Catholic, from what I remember. So I don't think he's, like, gonna be, like, he's not like Mel Gibson, where he's, like, trying to make churchy movies, you know?
I always wanted to see it because I heard that was, like, I feel like Scorsese may have said in his words, his magnus opus, like, this was the movie he wanted to, like, make for 20 years, so it's a passion project. So
not The Last Temptation of Christ?
That's what I read about Silence. Mm-hmm. And also, I love Andrew Garfield, the snow seeker. And Adam Driver is phenomenal, too.
And Adam Driver's in it, yeah. So... I need to watch that one because I've heard it's really good and I just haven't sat down and watched it. But yeah, I like the Edo period is really fun. It's something, Scott is not as into Japanese history. So like, but he likes historical stuff. So he's loving it. He was actually he didn't know that it was based on a book. My dad owns the book and had read it and the book series. And there was a miniseries in the 70s. And then they actually made it into a musical.
Interesting.
Which didn't last very long because I think it was very expensive to put on because they had a huge cast. And then they ended up, like, it just wasn't feasible. But I've never listened to it because I don't think it was, like, very, like, published. But, like, so I've known about Shogun since I was a little kid. I was like, oh, okay, I know what this is. And Scott was like, that looks good. And I was like, oh, good, we'll both watch it. So I was, like, looking up. And they're doing, like, very period accurate stuff. Mm-hmm. Like, of course, all the costumes are beautiful because people are wearing, oh, my gosh.
Like the kimono.
The K?
Yeah, the kimonos.
Kimonos.
Yeah.
They're wearing kimonos.
Yeah.
And, like, they have, like, the interesting... we had to look up, like, what all the hairstyles meant. Because, like, there are very specific hairstyles that samurai and shogun wore because of the helmets they wore. Mm-hmm. So that was super interesting. So I really like that aspect of it. I love that they got actual Japanese actors to play Japanese characters. It's like, I watch Memoirs of a Geisha, and I love that movie. But, like, half the actors are Chinese.
Yeah.
And I'm like, why? I was like, why? I love you, Michelle Yeoh. Why are you in this movie, though? You're from Hong Kong. But actually, she's Taiwanese.
I think you're right.
But she did Hong Kong movies, but yes. I think she's actually Taiwanese. But anyways... But I do like that, and I like that it's in Japanese.
Yeah.
And I love when they do movies that have that language barrier, and in TV shows where language barriers are a big part of the conflict, and, like, having people actually speak different languages, I fucking love.
Yeah.
Because I'm like, oh, because it puts you in the whole role of the character. And forgive me if I am remembering incorrectly, but I feel like sometimes they don't show subtitles. Like, if you're not supposed to know what they're saying, too.
I feel like that may...
Like, I can't remember.
I feel like that may happen, like, in a scene or two. Yeah, especially, I think, when he is first, like... it could be when he... Yeah, because it's, like, when they go to, like, they're trying to bathe him, and the women are, like, undressing him and stuff. So it's, like, you're kind of put in the moment with him where you're not really sure what's going on. And he's, like, I don't need to be bathed again. I had a bath, like, 3 days ago. Do you want me to get the flux? Like, you know... Like, I think that's one of the scenes I remember. You're right. There was no subtitles.
I think so.
Yeah.
Which sometimes it frustrates me, but also, like, I think when it's an artistic choice, I'm like, I get it. Because the whole point of this is, like, I like the focus on how the Japanese people and how, as a nation, they reacted to settlers, like, white settlers showing up, Europeans, and just being like, hi. I'm like, and of course, like, the fact that, like, he thinks that Japan is, like, a shit place, and then, like, he sees how progressed it is as a nation, and how, because, like, people, I don't think people understand, like, how advanced the Edo period Japan was, and, you know, it was its own little empire, and it was incredibly well built up, and isolation really was a good thing for them at first because they really didn't need help from other people, which I find fascinating and really cool, quite frankly. I'm glad that they are no longer isolated because I want to go to Japan one day.
Yeah, me too.
But because it's a cool culture. But, like, it is, I think it's interesting looking at that time period because one of my favorite animes, Samurai Champloo, also takes place during Edo period Japan, but it has, like, modern music because it's the same guy that did Cowboy Bebop, but, like, I like seeing that time period because I think it's cool and I think it's being presented well because they make a very clear point to not, it's not like Pocahontas where, like, maybe the script says that they're not savages, but the way it's filmed almost kind of, like, says, but they kind of are, you know what I mean, where, like, they're not as advanced as these Europeans, but it's like they were advanced. It's just a different kind of advanced.
Yeah.
Unlike those movies, I think they do a really good job of establishing how advanced and established the culture is in Japan, in feudal Japan. Mm-hmm. And then it's more of like, wow, this is a very ignorant European person who's like savages. And you're like, not really. I mean, different. But, like, I mean, so they boil people alive. We were hanging people and hanging their guts up.
Oh,
you know,
drawing and quartering
people. still gross.
Yeah.
Sorry. That's still pretty cruel. So, like, I think it's really well done, and I'm excited to see more of it, because, like, I was like, ooh. What about you?
Oh, yeah, definitely, definitely. That's what, if I'm not too tired after I get off tonight, I'm going to try to watch the episode that aired, because I think Hulu, they premiere at 11 p.m. on Mondays, but usually I'm asleep before 11 p.m., So I'm going to try to watch it tonight. But, yeah, I've really liked where it goes. I think they're, okay, I don't know if this is a spoiler, because I don't know. I'm just going ahead and, like, putting my prediction out there. I feel like Mariko and our lead, are going to, like, have something romantic going on. Because there's already kind of, like, a friendship blossoming between the two of them. Mm. So I was like, oh, we got to have a central love story here, I feel. So
I feel like this book was written, like, decades ago. And, yeah, that's just going to happen.
Yeah.
I did, by the way, I did get to watch Poor Things in American Fiction. Poor Things. I think it's a really well-made movie. I think it looks cool. I love steampunk things. So, like, I really like the colors and the steampunkiness. And I think everyone does a really good job. I think the makeup was really cool. And I love all, like, the little, like, goats, chickens, like, hybrids and all that stuff. Very cute, very quirky. But I will say, I do not understand how anyone could call it a feminist film, because I do not think it's misogynistic, and I don't even think it's anti-feminism, but it is a story written by a man, directed by a man.
Yep.
And it's really more about how the men in Bella's life perceive her and how they put their expectations of womanhood on her and her gender. And it's not until she starts working at a brothel and, like, has, like, a lover-friendship relationship with another woman and also, like, another woman. Like, it's not until then that she's kind of, like, able, and she becomes a communist or socialist. I can't remember if it was communist or socialist. That she becomes, like, the person she wants to be.
Yeah.
But I struggle to find it a feminist feature. I think it's more of a humanist feature. I think if we put it in a different time period with a man, it would be the same. It would be a very similar story. I don't think gender has a lot to do with it, to be honest, except that it's like Victorian steampunk and women didn't have that many options.
Yeah.
So, but I don't know. And I think Emma Stone did a great job, but yeah, I don't understand how people think it's a feminist film.
Yeah.
I don't... Not that a man can't make a feminist film, because I feel like Swallow was very much a feminist film. Because, like... But I also, like, think the director's voice was much more distant from that narrative. And this one is, like, very Yorgos central. And I think he's a nice man, and I don't think he's a misogynist or, like, a bad person. But I was like, when you were like, what are you going to think about? I was like, I don't understand why people think it's a feminist movie.
It's not. Very much the male gaze in all the sex same scenes.
And there's so much naked Emma Stone. So much naked Emma Stone. Yeah. And it is funny. It is funny, well, but I'm just like,
there's things that like bother me. So like, even like, so McCandice, which I think is like Godwin's assistant, if I'm not mistaken.
Oh, yeah. McCandles.
Yeah, McCandles. Thank you, McCandles. So mm-hmm. It's like, he's interested in getting married to Bella when she essentially has the mind of, like, a 5 or 6-year-old at that point. So it's like, I'm interested in marrying
her. Maybe a 12-year-old. I think she's a 12-year-old, but yeah.
It's still very...
I don't know. It's kind of fuzzy.
Very
it's
child. Very fuzzy. Like, because it's like she kills an animal for fun, which is a small animal. It's like a frog. It's an amphibian. But still, once again, that's another thing with Yorgos movies. I feel like a trademark for him is animal violence, because every single movie I've seen of him, there's been a violent scene with an animal. That's besides the point.
He does try
but
to
then it's
protect
like,
the frog.
Duncan, the first time Duncan meets her, he literally molests her. But because she's so, like, fascinated, like, by the idea of sex because of pleasure and it feeling good, she doesn't realize it's molestation. And so, like, there's all these things that, like, bother me.
Also, on the sex front, male gaze. Okay. Maybe I'm incorrect. I'm a vulva owning person. So here's the thing that bothered me about the masturbation stuff. Not that she's masturbating. That's normal. That would make sense. I thought it was weird that she automatically goes to inserting something and penetration. Because personally, as a vulva owner, maybe this is TMI, but I feel like most people I know would not go that route initially. Because honestly, this may be TMI, but if you don't own a vagina and a vulva, well, I guess the vulva is the whole thing, you know. But if you don't own a vagina, I'll just say a lot of people with vaginas do not achieve an orgasm through penetration alone.
Yeah.
So her just sticking a cucumber up her vagina, I was like, I don't think that would be day two of masturbation.
Yeah.
And I think that's a very male thing. And it's funny because she tries to like stick it up the maid's thing. And that's cute. And it's funny,
at the dinner table. So yeah.
At the dinner table. But I'm just like, that's not really like how that sexual exploration works, I think, in most people that I know that have a vulva. But maybe I've just been talking to the wrong people, or like maybe it's just the group of people I know, or that I've read about, you know, and like, you know, but I mean, honestly, like most people, like that's a secondary thing.
Yeah.
And it's mostly clitoral stimulation.
Well,
if you're gonna make a vulva owner achieve an orgasm.
Yeah.
Just saying. So to me, I was like, not only was it weird that like she was naked and like he molested her, but I was also like, I don't think he understands. I get it, because to a person who owns a penis, that is the thing that gets them off, you know? It's very cut and dry with penises, which, good for you penis owners, but like vulvas are much more complicated, you know?
Yeah.
So for me, I was like, I don't know. I kind of feel like that was a little inaccurate, and maybe I'm overthinking it, because you were like, I was coming at it from like a male gazy point of view and trying to figure out. I was like, I don't know. Is that I don't know if that's going too far, but I just thought it was a little inaccurate.
Literally. So now between you and one of our friends that was at the party, so there's now me, you, and her as three women, including myself, three women I know who have seen this movie that have all had similar feelings and thoughts about it, and yet every man I know has really thoroughly enjoyed this film.
Well, of course, Emma Stone. No, I'm just kidding. I'm not going to base them to Emma Stone's naked for half the movie. Because it's not really half the movie. It's like a good like 15 minutes, and I don't hate it, because I get... I don't know. I admire Yorgos being realistic, kind of, with sex. Because, like, movies where everyone's half-dressed when they're having sex is not very realistic.
Yeah.
You know? But at the same time, it was a lot of nakedness.
Yeah.
And sometimes it seemed a little too gratuitous. But he also does that in all his movies. So, like, I don't know. For me, and he also had a lot of naked penises running around,
yeah,
too. So I was kind of okay with, although like not a mostly flaccid, you know.
Yeah.
Once again, everyone's afraid of erect penises in cinema. Sorry, this has really got really into genital talk, and I don't know, but the movie just puts them in front of my face. So what?
That's what, like when people are trying to be like, "Well, I think it could be Best Picture." I'm like, no. It's not going to be Best Picture, guys. Like, it's nominated for a lot of awards because, like you said at the beginning, it's a very well-made movie. The costumes are cool. The production design, which is obviously one production design, is beautiful. Emma is obviously, like, it's a very, like, in-body performance, which is really great. Mark Ruffalo plays a true cad. It's funny.
It's
still, like, even in the year 2024, it's still a little scandalous at times.
Also, like... McCandles, mm-hmm, the scene that they showed in the script writing thing where he's there. I was looking at like an Academy thing, and it was like the scene where he's like, "It's your body, Bella Baxter. You do what you want with it." And she's like, "Oh, I usually charge 30 francs."
Like,
and
he's like, "That's a little low.
That seems very low."
Yeah.
It's funny, but I'm also like, Also, the permission for her to do whatever she wants with her body is given to her by a man, not herself. Well, she's not declaring it. And I'm kind of like, I don't know. Like, to me, I'm like, that's not feminine. That's not bodily autonomy. And to me, and maybe this is because I'm an American, and bodily autonomy is being stripped away from American women and other people. To me, feminism now means bodily autonomy. Let me do with my body as I wish, you know, and stop telling me what I can and can't do with my body. So even though it's a positive reinforcement, he's still teaching her like a child that she can choose what to do with her body. But she's already been choosing. So, like, I feel like he meant it in a sweet way, but it was just kind of a clumsy way to put that, in my opinion.
Yeah.
And it was also trying to make McCandles seem less creepy. I will say at least he makes McCandles be like, I'm so sorry. We don't have to stay engaged. I was smitten and he took advantage of me and I shouldn't have said yes. But at the same time, he still did. And then they end up walking, spoilers, down the aisle.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden, like, the husband thing.
Yeah, usually it's the third act that, like, it's like, okay, we probably didn't really need it. I understand because it's, like, the curiosity of who Bella was before she was Bella. I guess they're, like, trying to tie up the loose ends, but it's honestly probably the weakest part in the film. Yeah.
I didn't care who she was. I was like, who the fuck cares? I would have preferred her immediately remember him, which I guess she can't because she doesn't have... But she doesn't have Victoria's brain. Yeah. She has Bella's brain. But, I mean, I would have preferred her know what happened immediately and, like, shoot him in the church. I was like, I need to go to their house.
Yeah.
I need to do anything. Although it was anti-female circumcision.
No.
Which, to me, is torture. So, I guess that's good.
Jonathan.
It's anti that.
Jonathan, our friend pointed out, because I didn't actually catch this, but he goes, you know when you go to their house, you see a lot of, like, crosses and stuff, like, in the windows. Uh-huh. And I was like, I didn't even catch that, honestly. And so, also kind of, like, maybe there's a point in saying, like, what religion? I don't know, because it's like, once again, it's not...
Religion versus science?
Yeah, it's like, it's not talked about in the dialogue. It's more in the background. And I was so focused on them that I actually did not even see that. So I wouldn't have even have thought about it if he hadn't pointed it out. I do remember
seeing the servant with a broken arm, and I was like, oh, so he's beating up the servant.
Yeah, so yeah, no, that's definitely, it's like he's cruel. Like, he's absolutely cruel. Yeah. And she was obviously a very, very cruel person. Which is, like, I think it's cool because it's also saying, like, yes, she may be in that body, but, you know, because she is Bella, she doesn't have to be destined to be that cruel person. Because there is something about, like, saying you're not becoming your parents or you're not your parents, but then essentially she does become, like, Godwin, and that she, too, becomes, like, a scientist and a doctor. So.
Yeah. Yeah. She did, like, to stab those corpses in the
face,
though.
That made me cringe so hard. Like, I was like, ugh.
That was really, like, I did not, like, that made me feel very uncomfortable.
Yeah.
You know, which I guess it's supposed to, because it makes McCandles feel uncomfortable, too. I was like,
The sound is very visceral. You're like, ugh, so.
But I did, like, the end where they're, like, all just kind of happily living in the house.
I did laugh my ass off at seeing, because, like, that actor, I always forget his name. But I always call him Charlie because he played Charlie in Girls. But I was like, oh, him screaming like a goat just was fantastic.
Yeah, what is that? Oh, yeah. What is that guy's name?
I forgot his actual name. He's been in other
things.
He was
in that. He's been in a ton of stuff. Yeah. Christopher Abbott.
Thank you. Yep.
He was in, I need to see Sanctuary, but he was in It Comes at Night, Possessor, we need to see the Black Bear movie and Piercing and Martha, Marcy, May, Marlene. He was in. I think that was the first thing I saw him in. Because I'm not a Girls fan because I don't like Lena Dunham.
Yeah.
She, not my favorite. Yeah, I just, it was a really good movie. I miss his dialogue pattern, though. He's kind of lost it. And I kind of miss the stilted little dialogue, like, that there's in The Killing of a Sacred Deer and Dogtooth and The Lobster. And I kind of miss that. Because it was kind of his trademark. And now I'm like, oh, he's not really doing that anymore. Okay. I don't know if he wants to just be more commercially successful or if he's just, like, decided that that was a crutch and he doesn't want to rely on it anymore. I don't know. But I miss having, like, super disturbing things happen in his movies. Because, like, I don't know. That's kind of what I liked about him. And now he's a little safer. And even though the movie is beautiful, I feel like he's holding back a little bit, you know, with the weirdness. But it was okay. I would still say, like, if you... It's on Hulu right now. So if you like pretty movies and weird movies, probably watch it. But there's a lot of nakedness and a lot of sex. But it's mostly funny sex. It's not really, like, sexy sex. And I did watch American Fiction. I thought it was good. I didn't think it was as great as I wanted it to be, especially after winning Best Adapted Screenplay, because the dialogue was a little clunky in the beginning. It was very much like, hello, sister, hello, brother, hello, mother, hello, hello, our father killed himself. And you're just like, oh my God, geez. But it's very, like, stilted almost. But then, like, when he starts writing, I liked those scenes where he had the characters in the room with him and he was like, redoing the dialogue. I liked that writing. And I liked, like, the multiple endings part. Mm-hmm. And I liked the part when he was watching the African-American cinema. And it was just, like, basically only The Wire and just, like, black teenagers getting shot in the street. Yeah. And, like, I liked the satire of that. Like, this is how white people see black culture. Or it was, like, a slavery show, and I was like, oh, that's funny pointing out, like, how, like, every, like, quote-unquote popular African-American tale on, like, predominantly white channels is like, everyone's a slave or everyone's in a gang.
Yeah.
And I like that. I do think it was, like, maybe a movie that should have come out, like, maybe 5 years ago.
I was about to say, so yeah, so the book came
out. Did you already say that? Yeah. And was it put in my brain? Because, like, I was like, I feel like this movie should have come out, like, 5 years ago. Because I feel like I would have felt very differently about it.
I think the book was written in the early 2000s. It may have been, like, 2002, 2004. And so if they had done an adaptation even 10 years ago, it probably would have been even more relevant than it is now. So it was one of those adaptations that should have came sooner than it did, honestly. Now, I liked it. I like the type of satire that isn't too over the head at all times. And a lot of people, that's actually a big critical thing where a lot of people didn't like the family drama aspects of his life. I actually did. I thought the family, I mean, obviously Sterling K. Brown was a scene stealer.
And Tracy Ellis Ross. Yeah. Or does she just go by Tracy Ellis now? But I thought she was great. I was a little sad.
Yeah.
You don't see as much of her character as I want it to. And I really liked the girlfriend. And I know that actress, and I'm blanking on her name, because she's been in a lot of stuff. But, I liked the family stuff once they got done with the clunky family, like, introductions. I was like, okay. I liked the mom played by Leslie Uggams, which I forgot she also plays the blind owl in the Deadpool movies.
Oh, yeah.
Because she's wearing sunglasses the whole time. But she's a very famous, long-standing actress. And so it was, I liked her as the mom. And I liked the family stuff. And I liked that there was a reason for him to write this book that he didn't believe in because of, like, everything going on with his mom. But I mean, like, I like over-the-top satire, like RoboCop, I find hilarious.
You see?
Because I want to laugh at
it. When I think of over-the-top satire, I think of Don't Look Up, so,
oh, okay. Let me see. I prefer a RoboCop to a Don't Look Up. Because Don't Look Up was taking itself too seriously.
Yeah.
I need it to be not taking itself seriously and making fun of it. Or I need it to be something like Get Out, where it's satire, but it's so darkly humorous that, like, you're both scared and laughing.
It's so smart.
Which is hard to write.
Yeah.
It's hard to write. But I feel like if this movie had come out before, like, years ago, it could have been another, I guess it kind of was another Get Out because it won Best Screenplay. But, like, I feel like all the things said are important. Yes, black people are not put in the box of what the media portrays that culture to be. I'm not a black person, so obviously I don't know. But I do know that people don't fit in a box. And, like, not every black person is in a gang. And not every black person has gone through that stuff, you know, and lives in the inner city. It's like Stanley from The Office. What about me is urban? I grew up in the suburbs. Yeah. I love that line. Because Michael is just such an idiot.
Yes.
But I've been watching The Office a lot. But I feel like it's a good message, but it wasn't as good as I wanted it to be. And I honestly thought Jeffrey Wright was a little stilted. And I think it was his character, but I kind of miss, like, his kind of warmer characters. And I was a little bit like, ooh, I kind of understand why he didn't win Best Actor for this specific mm-hmm. role. I want him to be nominated for other things, though. Because I do think he deserves to win a Best Actor Oscar at some point. Because he is a fantastic actor. But I didn't think this... I feel like there's a better role out there for him. I feel like. But Sterling K. Brown kind of stole the show.
Yeah.
Whenever he was on screen. He was great.
He was.
I also liked their housekeeper.
Oh, yeah. She was so cute.
And her little love story was adorable.
It was.
And yeah, it was a good movie. I feel like older people would really like it. And it's a good story, and I liked the speech that the screenwriter and director
yeah.
said.
I Ford thought over I think, street.
Thank You're you. Welcome. I think talking about like make a billion, $10 million movies instead of like one $200 million movie, $1 billion movie, so that we can have more movies like this. Because it is a good movie.
Yeah.
And that's kind of what, there was another speech that kind of said the same thing. Well, and Justine Triet kind of said that about Anatomy of a Fall. She's like, you know, we need smaller budget movies and more of them.
Yeah.
So there can be more filmmakers out
I
there.
I agree.
So it was good. What about, I can't remember, you liked it, right?
I did, yeah, I did. I would say it's like the middle ground for me of the Best Picture nominees. Yeah. Not my favorite, but not like the lower end of the totem pole either.
Yeah. Definitely didn't hate it. Was not a maestro. Mm-hmm. Didn't make me angry. So. But I feel like that's everything I watched. Yeah. What about you? Is there anything else that you got to see that you want to talk about?
I did, but I'm going to wait till our next episode of Sidetracks because I saw the time. But yeah, I did watch a few more things, but I should be done with at least season two of the one thing I wanted to talk about. So I'll be a little further ahead by the next time we get on too. So.
Oh, good.
Yeah.
I did start watching Severance too, but I don't want to talk about that yet.
Which show?
I haven't.
Severance. Oh, yeah.
Plus.
Okay.
But I haven't gotten very far into it, so okay. I don't want to talk about it yet because I don't really know how I feel about it yet. Except I do like it. But yeah, that's another one. But we talked about the Oscars debriefing a lot. Yeah. So, and sorry if we got like political. I don't know. Part of me hates getting like political in like a my opinion is the right opinion way. Life is much more complicated than that. And I know that I don't know everything. And I don't live in Israel or Gaza. So obviously I'm looking at it from an outsider's perspective. But I guess it just really bothered me that the Academy won't put his speech out there. Because like Michael Moore's, I remember the Michael Moore thing mm-hmm. happening. And at the time, I didn't really understand it as a kid. And I probably felt negative about him as a person. But I do admire people for speaking out against things that they disagree with when they're hurting other people. And I think, I still don't understand why we have to take a side of if you are against genocide for Palestinians, you're for it for Israelis. And I just don't think that's what most people feel in their hearts. I think most people just would like there not to be the violence. Just like in the Ukraine, like, I don't want all the Russian people to die. I just want the Russian government to stop invading a country that is its own sovereign nation and to stop killing people. I don't think that's a bad thing to say about either one of those situations. But I think some people didn't listen or understand what he was saying. And I'm hoping that's mostly people that they would go back and listen and be like, oh, I understand what he's saying. Okay. But it just bothers me that they're censoring him because I think if you've seen the movie, you can understand that there's no hate in his heart for the Holocaust survivors, that he is very pro Holocaust survivors. And so I don't know. It just bothered me that he's getting that kind of a negative attention when I think he did mostly a good thing. Also, I think it's honestly his most enjoyable film. It's not enjoyable. I don't know what I'm saying. Compared to Under the Skin, where Under the Skin is like a mind fuck, this one was like, it was a mind fuck, but it was like a different, I don't know. I just really liked it a lot.
Yeah.
But I also hated how I felt afterwards.
Yeah.
But I feel like you're supposed to feel that way.
I think so too.
I don't know.
Yeah. Well, hopefully they'll upload it soon, is what I'm going to hope for.
Yeah. Or they never will. And I don't, you know, part of me is like, I get them trying to be neutral, but I also feel like, you know, but what I'm trying to say is like, I'm not an expert on this subject. I just don't like killing other people. So that makes me sad. And that's why I liked his speech about the girl that glows. And I think that's an important thing.
Yeah.
So anyways, so I'm sorry if we got a little, but I did think that was interesting that was the big controversy this year, was that of all things. But at least nothing, I would have been almost more fun if somebody got slapped, honestly. That was interesting. Although I feel really bad for Will Smith because it seems like his life has gone down a downward spiral ever since
popularity
then.
Popularity vote has dropped majorly. So. Yes.
Well, and his marriage is like not great, but then also his wife keeps talking about how not great their marriage is. It seems really mean and cruel. So I understand more why he would have felt the need to act out in that way, because I feel like he's getting mind-fucked at home, and I just feel sad for him. But yeah, we'll be watching Near Dark next week, right?
Near Dark on Criterion Channel.
But we love you guys. Thank you for listening. What movies did you want to win at the Oscars? Did your favorites win? Let us know. And be sure to watch Near Dark, and we love you. And stay safe out there and stay well, because everyone keeps getting sick around me. So I'm finally feeling better and everyone else is getting sick. So take your vitamins, wash your hands, stay away from people if you can. Okay. And then I'm going to shut up now. Love y'all. Happy St. Patrick's Day too, but that will have been passed by this time.
Happy St. Patty's Day. Spay and neuter your pets. Take care of those babies. Try, if you guys want to, find ways to get involved in your community. It's just a cool thing to do. We love you guys. Yeah. Take care of yourselves and one another. And we just look forward to seeing you next time. Same spoopy time, same spoopy channel.
Stay spoopy, y'all. Bye.
Bye, everybody.
Bye.
Bye, kids. Bye.
Bye, Ben. Bye, puppies. Bye, kitties.
Grindhouse Girls Podcast is a production by Katie Dale and Britt Ray. Our editor is N.R. Moody. All music used is royalty-free and can be found in our annotations. You can follow us on all of our socials. And if you have any comments, questions, or just want to say hey, Our email is contactus@grindhousegirlspod.com. Thanks for listening.